Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wrath of the Half-Elves by J.T. Williams. Narrated by Daniel Thomas May. 1. Dimming Jewel. Keelan waited in the main hall. The survivors that had suddenly arrived spoke of something that brought with it such a sickening punch, he thought he would become sick. Eirin, the very city he deemed safe, the place where his and Ulri's baby brother was guarded, faced annihilation. He had helped to get the host inside. They said very little, and the original man he had met, the one from Eirin, had actually taken a blade to his side in their escape, but he was not the only one injured. Once Hunda had a salve in place on the man's ribcage, the man was led to the great hall and poured a large glass of wine. The man slurped the beverage as many of the others took seats around him. They were all eager to hear more of what had happened. Keelan's anger grew the more he thought of his infant brother. He would not let him die. He would not have the same fate as Kallik and Taslin.
"They were all dead,"
the old man said. Sirk and Lizik leaned in as he spoke. Breathor looked up from across the room as he tied a bandage on one of the other men. He then walked over to the table near the fireplace and poured a cup of tea.
"How close did you get to the river valley?" Sirk asked.
"I stood on the beach just before the ruins of the lighthouse. The stench of death was beyond explainable. I saw no green tree, no unburnt bit of grass or flowers. The ground and the mountains were blackened. The city of Varric was nothing but smoldering ruins, and I, the Bard of Eirin, had to see it for myself. I could not believe when word came to our gates that our enemies had fallen and that our good Sultan and his flying machine were lost. I had helped him when he began his journey to the secret place in the mountains. He had told me to protect the city if they failed. I laughed at him, saying what could stand against the might of Eirin. He nodded to me, but nothing else."
Breathor brought Dabar a cup of tea to go with his wine, and the man, aged with grey hair and a less than fluid motion to his actions, took a sip.
"This is good tea."
"If you would like to rest, that is fine,"
Ulri said, now joining them.
"The others are lying down. I understand you came under attack before you even made it to the mountains."
"We did. Our group was double what we have now. We took a secret passage out of the city and came up on the other side of a grand protectorate camp. They pursued us, and several of our men stood their ground while we fled. I remember that morning well. I had been meditating after being woken from the shaking of the earth and flashes to the east in the middle of the night. I knew the battle was happening and that there was nothing I could do. With dawn came silence. By evening we spotted a lone ship returning to port. There were only a few men of Varric and an elf. That was it. The Drian's sails appeared behind them. We got the men and the elf into the city and our port defenses spun to life. We took at least 20 of the Drian vessels and tore them to pieces, but they began onslaughts of explosive attacks. We raised the city shields to protect our people. It was a few days later, but when the first waves of legionnaires made their way down Amhes Road and began to form, I knew the truth. All of our loved ones were dead. The strangest happening was the arrival of the Sanguine Monks. We had not heard a single whisper from them after Amhe departed, but then they appeared in the palace and spoke of you."
He pointed to Keelan.
"They said to seek the half-elf. They told us that you were our only hope. I did not think any more of it. We gathered our supplies, the best of our men, and the ones who wished to follow us from the battle only a few hours before. Once we took the secret passage and evaded our captors, we went into the mountains. We told those that knew our way out of the city to seal the passageway. If we were caught, we did not want to risk any easy way into Eirin. We knew none lived north of the valley, We had to believe that any survivors went south. This place was the first forest we found that seemed of liking to an elf.
Keelan grinned.
I do not know why the Sanguine sought me. I am just one man.
There is power in your bloodline, a younger one, a baby. They have him, the Sanguine. They say he is the most potent of Dwemer blood they have ever seen.
Ulrei looked to Keelan and then back to Dabar.
He is safe, for now.
As long as the shield above the city is up.
A literal shield of metals or magic?
Lizik asked.
It is an energy-based device. We have spinning crystals beneath the city, powered by the magic of the moon, recharging every night when the lunar light shines down upon the city itself. We have great fear. The Drian have a sorcerer called Aghanim, a practitioner of blood magic. We are afraid he seeks the power of the Itsu gods to pull the light from the moon. Without moonlight, Erin will fall.
This name, Frinda said. Aghanim, I have heard it, but I thought he was dead. The man would have to be a few hundred years old.
He is very much alive and resides in one of the massive Drian cities in the far west. The city is called Rida. It is the place of snakes, a shrine to their snake deity where ritual sacrifices take place before the great cobras. It is a place devoid of the powers of life. Only death is there.
Ulrei sat back in her chair.
We will need an army and the full power of magic behind us if we are to save Erin. My Mortua beacon needs adjustments and additional infusions of dark magic, but we will move on to Fadabrin and then determine our next path.
I have delivered my message to the half-elf, and I assume from your similarities you are his sister.
Ulrei smiled.
Yes, Dabar.
Family is the most fortunate gift. You should do all you can to guard one another.
The man stood, and Lizik led him to the bedchambers to join the others. Breador sat down with the others.
I could get to the city now, with my amulet, but I could not move an army there.
Blood magic, the kind he speaks of, takes much time. We are fortunate that the powers within Erin are as they are. We have some time, but not too much.
Ruach and Jessia now joined them.
The Aura is working on something down below,
Jessia said.
Something of metal, metal of the strangest kind.
She does my bidding, Jessia. You would be good to listen to her, for her wisdom is beyond mine in some ways. Arusis could learn much from an acolyte of necromancy.
I prefer elemental magics. Bones can stay where they are.
Ulrei laughed. Ruach poured himself a cup of wine and sighed.
The elf in there, he is a scion, but he remembers little of the battle. He was knocked unconscious, or so it seems, just before the Orc Star came to life. He awoke to fire and sunrise.
So much death, said Keelan. Does he know of any else who survived?
Ruach shook his head.
I wouldn't worry yourself of it. The dead are that way, and that way they shall remain.
Ulrei and Keelan walked down to the lower halls. As they entered the room, Keelan felt a sudden chill in the air, and a brilliant purple bolt of magic from Viora's staff on a large metallic device blinded his eyes.
How does it go?
Ulrei asked.
The words of Mortua are not the easiest to chant, and the infusion process of raw metal takes some time, but,
she said, standing her staff against the nearby wall,
it will be brilliant once complete.
Keelan walked around the metal construct. There were several jewels sitting on a circular base. Metal spikes brimmed with the same purple magic Viora used from her staff.
This will help us, he asked Ulrei.
Yes, at least once it can be set up properly. The power to activate the device draws heavily on its actual construct. The wooden base we are using will not contain the power necessary for a summoning as we will need. Trell and I have already spoken of what will happen when we go to Farabrin. His people will need comforting, and any willing must fight.
I doubt they have much fight left in them,
Keelan said.
Most who have shown resistance have been beaten down, and others are so afraid they forsake any freedoms they have.
That is folly in itself,
Viora said.
One cannot be free if someone can just come and take their freedom.
The race of men is weak,
Ulri said.
Even their summonings are horrid, mindless, lumbering hunks of flesh, without the mind to even do much other than blindly run forward. They are just as good dead. It will be the others I summon, elves, many elves.
From where? Keelan asked.
From north of here, a valley. They are already stirring and will move with purpose toward us here at the moment they are needed.
Those of the Riverlands? The elves of Fikmark and Vumark?
She nodded. Keelan looked down and shook his head.
I am not sure how the others will feel of such a...
distasteful action?
Viora asked.
Yes.
Ulri rubbed her hands along the glowing metal of the in-progress Mortua beacon.
I know, Keelan, but there is much that will be distasteful in the coming days. You must trust me,
she said, suddenly staring at him.
Trust me that I do this for you and our brother. I have this power, and I thought all I knew were dead. Now I must use it for what good I can. But that will not be without being a much different person from when we left Urlas.
Keelan went to her and embraced her.
Neither of us are the same, he said. We are all holding on. Ruach and Jessia have lost many they cared about. Breathor lost his brother. I just want to assure we do not lose each other.
Ulri sniffled against him.
We won't, Keelan. I will make sure of it. The elves will not be mindless as the race of men, and in such I will have summoned something beyond mere undead.
She left his embrace and walked around the edge of the device.
Go on, Keelan. Viora and I will continue our work with this. The others should know of my plans, except for the wizards. They in particular I will deal with when it comes time.
They both began their enchantments again. At almost an instant, Ulri was in a trance, with her eyes glowing white. Viora smiled at him and bowed. He wasn't too sure what to think of what Ulri had said, but he left to speak with the others anyway. As he walked back toward the main hall, he paused for a moment, staring at the glowing tree in the entryway. It seemed to be leaning toward the doorway leading outside, as if something pulled it in that direction. He went up to the door and opened it to find the Mortua crystal glowing. A faint, misty light hovered above the woods, and the air was much colder than it had been in some time. He could feel death in the air, and for a moment he heard a faint song on the wind. He shook his head. He didn't need thoughts of Vanku, and he sought to keep his mind far from such thoughts. He went to the others, finding Ruach, Jessia, and Breathor sitting outside on the balcony. Ruach was sharpening his sword and sat up as Keelan walked their way.
You look horrible, he said with a smile. Rest, you need it, especially before whatever your sister plans. Trell was speaking with us before and is eager to return to Fadabrin.
The device they are working on will take time,
Jessia said.
I do not understand the specifics, but it is not of magic like I know, to say the least.
Keelan stared at Ruach and then looked down. Breathor leaned in.
What is it? Does she need something else for her device? Is there more than simply the crystal that she requires?
No, Keelan said plainly. He then glanced over at Ruach. How do elves feel of death?
It is not known to many of us, and given our endless lives, it is considered abnormal to die. That as it is, life is precious and so is death, if it is meant to be.
Ulri will be calling the dead to this place, all of the recent dead who can be summoned.
The Vans of the Valley?
Keelan nodded.
I wanted to tell you as soon as I knew.
Ruach leaned back in his chair.
I do not know my true feelings towards this. It is unsettling. I will tell you, necromancy has always been deemed an evil art, and a feared one. It is unnatural.
Why does she summon them? Surely there are others,
Bredor asked.
She seems to specifically want elves. She said the race of men is weak alone.
Ruach stood up and went to the balcony.
I do not know who or what will come to this necromancer's calling, but I do hope that they will not be the vile creatures we fought beside a few hours ago. But then again, I am not sure how to even react to seeing those I once called friend dead. Sometimes death seems easier for both those dying and the ones left behind.
I wish I could say that was so,
Keelan said. From behind them, they noticed another, one of the companions of Dabar, an elf. Ruach noticed him, and his demeanor changed immediately.
I awoke to the sounds of screams in my mind,
he said.
Ruach embraced him. It is well, brother. There are no screams here.
Bredor brought a chair to the elf, and he sat, rubbing his arms. A few moments later, Ustavis came with tea.
I infused this with herbs of a mountain cactus of the west. It will assist you in further healing.
Ustavis poured the elf a cup, and then began pouring several more cups.
It is good for all of us,
he said.
Were you at the battle in the Riverlands? Ruach asked.
I was near. The vanguard. I still remember my king's words to me. Ebil, you have no business on the front. It was funny because that was what the Ficmarkian warriors said.
So you were from Vumark?
Bredor asked.
Yes,
he nodded, sipping his tea.
We were among the first to arrive in the Riverlands. As fate would have it, I fired my bow one time before being pushed aside by a Ficmarkian swordsman. That was enough to twist my ankle and force me to the back of the line. I didn't know it would save my life. You would not believe what happened there. There were carpets with men upon them, something I had heard in stories but never seen in my 700 years. Then the flying machine with lightning leaping along the mountains. But it was when the betrayers came, the forces of men, that I knew fear and angst unlike any of what an orc could draw up.
He looked to Ruach.
I am sorry. I know you as a scion. You fought well before we did, and when our brethren were in trouble, I followed the others fleeing into the woods.
The elf drew a knife and pushed it against his own neck. Ruach stood and reached out to him.
No, son, no.
I have brought dishonor to my king and my people.
You are alive, Ruach told him, and you continued to fight as all elves do.
Ruach slowly pulled the knife from Ebil's hand.
I am sorry. I know this is not as I should be. But Ruach,
he said with tears growing in his eyes,
they have burned the woods. The dragons, the men of the Grand Protectorate, they burned Vumark, and their forces swarmed toward Ficmark. A few of us decided to try to reach survivors of Varric, but we found just more death. When by chance we made it to Erin, I took the chance to better my soul and assist Dabar.
You've done much,
Keelan said.
By the standard of my kin, I am dishonorable. But you will find a place for new honor, especially in the coming days.
About that time, Trell came out to where the others were.
I have received word from Fada Breen,
he said.
The situation has worsened. They moved all of the magic, save those of the High Sanctum, out of the city. There is talk of a legion approaching from the north to reinforce the city.
We will need to move quickly to secure the city and rescue the arch now,
Ruach said.
Right you are, elf, Keelan, your sister moves her device outside. Perhaps we should go to her.
Keelan quickly made his way to the front of the grounds, leaving Ruach with Ebil. Jessia joined him and exhaled as they reached the spot where the Mortua beacon was.
I had lain down to sleep, thinking they didn't need any help. I did not know they would be done so quickly.
Ulri and Viora had the strange device meant for the beacon lying on the ground. It was round in its center, with a star-like pattern made of jagged metal on the outside. Several small crystals were glowing on the outside and rippling with bolts of purple magic, almost in sync with the undulating dimming of the crystal. Ulri and Viora stood on either side of it. With their hands above their heads, Ulri began to speak.
Mortua, Mother, Dark Mother, Night Matriarch of the Fallen, hear my prayers.
The ground began to ripple around their feet.
See what we have constructed as a holy vessel for your power. Know your plight and answer with your everlasting favor to drive back the minions of the race of men. May salvation come upon the backs of the dead in your honor.
The ground around them began to float up and surround the two necromancers. The earth shifted and appeared as hands grasping the crystal from the hastily constructed wooden holder and moved it to the metallic device. In a flash of magic, the crystal rested perfectly in the holder created for it.
Thank you, Mortua. May your beacon call to the dead at the turn of night. May those cut down too soon return to the service of the wielders of death magic. In the old spirit of Ur.
Breathor tapped Keelan's arm and glared at him.
She speaks of Urd.
Keelan simply looked away from Breathor. He didn't know what to say, and it would do no good to stop his sister at this moment. The crystal seemed to hold a consistent glow as they stared on. After a few moments, all returned and smiled to Keelan, who did not return the smile. She looked to the others.
The beacon has been activated. With the coming of night, we will begin to see its power. Trell, Father Breen has a growing shadow.
It does, and we are running short on time to assist. A legion approaches my city.
Viora smiled.
A legion arriving after we have the city would be wonderful. The defences of the city are currently set to that of the Will of Light. We could set them as we wish, and have a deadly defence indeed.
Ulri nodded.
You should all rest. Prepare. We will talk further later tonight of such things. Let the five know.
Keelan stared at her as the others went back inside.
Come with me, Keelan.
They began heading north and into the mountains. It was a rocky path with large boulders and even larger trees, where a once well-laid path snaked higher into the white rocks above them.
You know what bothers me, so do not ask, Keelan said.
There is more than you know,
she snapped.
Just follow me and I will show you.
They continued following the path until they began up a large flat hill well above the trees. He had not noticed this place before, but it could have been from how dense the foliage was.
We are Dwemha, brother.
Half, but yes.
You wield a blade of our ancestors. Both, in fact. Your armor enhances your senses, and you are more attuned to the powers of old than even I.
Am I? She made a snide snicker.
Keelan, even Jessia saw your power at the Hall of the Moon. You literally crushed the brains of the monks around you with your thoughts. That is beyond mere magic. You should take heed to not frighten the Roosis. She does not understand you as I.
They continued climbing until they reached a large flat stone. As they walked forward, runic writing appeared. Keelan had seen a place like this before. He looked at Ulri, who made a motion for him to go in.
So you know of hidden Dwemha places, and obviously found one here?
He asked her.
It was one of the many places I found in my travels. I began to feel where such places were hidden. I became more attuned. But my mind cannot embrace what you have. You know of the Dwemha way. My mind was already attuned to powers as an Archon, and now...
She paused.
Something admittedly darker. But that is why I bring you here.
Keelan went to the doorway, and it opened. A dark door with the imprint of a skull was ahead of him.
Not a Dwemha sign.
Who said anything about looking for a Dwemha sign?
They walked forward, and he pushed open the door. As he entered the room, he looked around to see thousands of books and even more bones lining the walls around him, and for as far as he could see in the pale lights. As he and Ulri began to walk, the place came to life, and large torch basins lit their way. As he went ahead of Ulri, he noticed how different this place was from the one he had been at before, north of the Riverlands.
So, a library?
He asked her. She nodded.
Yes, but what else? Take a book.
He picked up a book, feeling the heavy leather of its binding. A small flap that kept it closed seemed to spark as his fingers touched it. He could not read the writing on the cover and immediately tried to open it. He could not. He looked to Ulri in confusion.
Is it locked? He asked.
Only to those who do not have a proper key.
She lowered her staff over the book, and a soft purple glow released the strap on the book. He opened the book and began to read, only to immediately look up at Ulri.
I no more than read a few lines, and I read of Ur. This is a place of the Dwemha.
Ulri pushed her staff against the bookcase and unlocked every book.
Pick another one. Pick as many as you need.
Keelan did so, and book after book spoke of Ur and the Itsu.
Ulri, what is this place?
He asked. She began to walk, motioning for him to follow. They went several paces and then through an opening in the bookshelves. They proceeded toward a large hall that led to another lighted room. This one was much taller and had the strangest of white fogs floating at the far end of the room. Ulri lifted her staff up, and the fogs immediately fled, revealing a massive stone statue seated on a throne of bones.
She said. This place was one of his true temples, a place revered by our ancestors, and where I first learned that to tap into my power, I must study the ways of the old master.
Keelan stared at her.
You know who is and what it was that killed Kallak. The entity that slowly murdered our brother. The device that our parents' blood activated, that brought up an ancient evil not seen in these lands for thousands of years. What the one called Vakron Tur planned to do?
Something you agreed should have happened.
Yes, but this is something else, Ulri. You use his spells as your own. Your prayers to Mortua are one thing, but you tell me now that you have been using this place as a shrine to a god of the Itsu.
Ulri gripped his arms.
Keelan, I am your sister. I have control of my powers, and none can compete with my skill in necromancy. I cannot simply dabble in my power. You talk like you hate me.
I hate what you are using for power. If the others find out...
They can't. Not even Viora. She dabbles, but she is but a student, no matter what she says. She is skilled, but she cannot know this secret. Keelan, I trust you, and what I said before is the truth. I will do whatever I must to get to our brother. I will stand by you on whatever battlefield we are called to, on the literal walls of Eirin, if necessary. But we will make many decisions in the future that you might not like. I know what is needed, and you know my minions do not come from the living.
Keelan looked down at the ground and then back up at the statue. Its appearance was that of a horse head, with multiple spikes coming off it. Its body was as a snake. It had arms like a man, but instead of two, he had four. Each one held a skull.
Ulri, I have heard the voice of the true master of death, the one we met when our journey began in the glacial seas. Vanku is following me somehow.
Vanku is death. His power was weakened well before us.
He is gaining it again.
She reached around, holding her brother around his chest.
Keelan, don't. Keep your mind here.
She pulled him back out of the temple and slowly led him past the books and toward the doorway. As they walked outside, the mountain cast a shadow over the woods.
We must remember our fallen family, We must make sacrifices to assure our last brother survives. Keelan, I promise, if the power of the Itsu becomes...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?